Welcome to the Butts and Seats podcast, episode number 112.
Much better day this time around than it was last time. Aside from having to fight with Comcast.
Xfinity,
but you know,
fucking customer service and sales can go fuck themselves. I don't even want your sponsorship.
This.
No, this was the worst.
We've known that they've sucked, though.
Yeah.
Yes, this is particularly bad. But I don't even want to talk about today. Last episode, we started the show having us take a shot, even though it was not on the 10.
And I almost did today because of Xfinity.
Last time we did it because Nick was having a particularly bad day. Turns out Nick's bad day was for naught, because the reason he was having a bad day was because he got denied for a job. However, he ended up getting that job.
Yes, they were hiring two roles, and so they denied my one.
To offer him the second.
It was the same job, but it was just like categorically. And so
Nick just like went into the hiring portal and saw denied and was very upset. But it ended up being fine, so no shot necessary.
So yes, I will be doing a lot of the same stuff, just at a new place.
Yeah, and it's a good thing. It's all good. Speaking of fun times.
We finally made it.
It's the Great American Bash at the Beach.
Nope.
At the beach, in the bell of the ball.
Nope.
The Great American Bash at the ball.
It's the Great American Bash. We finally made it after all of that.
What feels like the longest build that we've ever had. Which you said it wasn't the longest build, but it feels like the longest build we've ever had. It's finally culminating in this, what must be a great pay-per-view, right? We've waited for so long, it's going to be a great pay-per-view.
All right, Emily, I know you're going to be terrible at this, but I want you to guess. Slamboree was our last pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. When did the Slamboree episode come out?
Oh, right. It's August now. It came out in May.
April 24th.
I was going to say April, but that felt too early. Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's been a little while since the last pay-per-view.
Wow. Wow, that's ridiculous. Oh my god.
But the Great American Bash is live from Baltimore in an arena we were just at because
we
went to Raw.
We
were at the Raw after SummerSlam, and it was quite a good show.
It was a really good show.
Much better than the Hershey show.
Yes. And we were a lot less tired because we weren't riding roller coasters all day. But yeah, a lot has changed in the Baltimore Arena because it's no longer the Baltimore Arena. We've talked about this. It's gone through a myriad of names since it was the Baltimore Arena.
I don't have much to get into before the actual show. One thing I didn't mention from Thunder that I feel like you'll get a kick out of. So Norman Smiley and Ralphus, you know how they're on their little Misfits journey?
Yeah, trying to make money.
For some reason, they were in a suburban neighborhood and there was like a children's backyard wrestling federation going on. And Norman's like, hey, I can like teach you guys some holds. They're like, why? It's like, don't you know who I am? Yeah, you're Booker T, right?
Oh, that's cute.
But he's teaching their champion, like, here's how you do this. And then he quick rolls up the champion. Ralphus counts the pin and he steals the backyard title belt.
Norman steals the title?
Yeah.
Wow.
So your new backyard champion is Norman Smiley.
We're not going to talk about how problematic it is that they confuse the two black guys, but whatever.
Yeah, you tell me Vince Russo wrote that joke.
Cute. Yeah.
Yeah, this is in the same vein as when they had Jeff Jarrett, double J, double MA, where he was tapping out kids.
That is cute, though. I mean, I do like that. I like incorporating, you know, kid stuff, and that's in that vein, that's a good way to do it.
So, Emily, I think the wait's been long enough. Let's get into this show.
Yeah, we have been waiting since April.
It's the Great American Bash 2000, live on June 11th, 2000, Baltimore, Maryland, the Baltimore Arena. So the Raw in 2024 did around 11,000 plus fans. How many did this show do, you think?
They said that was sold out, so I'm going to assume not that many. 5,000.
7,000.
Okay.
However, only 4,600 paid.
Classic. Classic.
And, Emily, I think, why not? Let's break out an old favorite.
Oh, no. We're doing prices, right?
Yes, we are. So, last year's Great American Bash did 185,000 buys. Okay. Last month's Slamboree did 65,000 buys. How many pay-per-view buys did the Great American Bash 2000
do? I'm assuming we're going to continue going on a downward slope here. And say we're doing 45,000 buys.
You actually went the wrong direction.
Really?
This show did 85,000 buys.
Interesting. Why?
Goldberg, maybe?
Maybe.
It is still 100,000 less than last year.
Yes, that's true. But it's not as horrific as 45 would have been.
Don't worry. The year's not over. I think the lowest they actually hit is 50.
Okay. That's fair.
Just for a low bar for it.
For a low. Okay.
So the show starts with a recap. 2 weeks ago, Goldberg returned with a blurry washed out filter over all of his footage.
Yeah, you were really like incensed by that filter.
It was just a weird choice.
It was a choice. It was an artistic choice.
You know what it was? It felt lazy. It felt like, oh, this will make it more cinematic.
Yeah, it's like, oh, this is a dream. Like put a fog over it.
He then got suspended and arrested on Thunder.
Goldberg did?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's why there's cops outside the Baltimore Arena to look for Goldberg.
Oh, okay. I was not following. I just, you know, I didn't even question it. I really didn't even question it. I really just thought it was just WCW antics. Like, don't let that big guy in you. He's mad at me. I don't know.
Well, he popped up and we were like, oh, hey, I know that gate.
Yeah, we know all the views. 2000 wasn't that long ago.
We then get an opening narrated package through a couple of the matches, which they later just seem to use the snippets of, like, match by match for those matches.
Yeah.
We get Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson on commentary. And we start pretty quick. It's the Misfits in action coming to the ring. Captain Rection tells everyone to get in line and then says that Lieutenant Loco is going to be facing the Disco Inferno for the Cruiserweight title.
He has a mission. And his mission is to keep that title.
Yes.
It's a very straightforward mission. But he feels the need to, like, who's the fucking guy?
Lieutenant Loco.
No, not Chavo.
Oh, Captain Rection.
Fuck that. But Captain Rection feels the need to put everybody in a line.
Sorry,
and be like,
let me make it less dumb. Hugh Morris.
That is less dumb than Captain Rection.
Isn't it humorous?
No, but it's better than Hugh G. Rection. It is.
So Chavo grabs the mic and he has a toy grenade for some reason.
Yeah, why?
He makes a Stripes reference. We get multiple Stripes references in this show.
I've unfortunately never seen Stripes.
Yeah, it's a very dad movie.
Yeah, I'm sure my dad loved it. I know we have it on DVD. DVD, not Blu-ray. I know we have it.
It's a Bill Murray one.
Oh, then we might like it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's just,
it's a dad movie.
It's not timely in 2000.
When did it come out?
1981.
Yeah, definitely wouldn't say that was timely.
The Filthy Animals come out to the ring. Disco's wrestling wearing a Kobe Bryant jersey and what is designed to look like Laker shorts, but are not Laker shorts on
oh,
the bottom.
No.
I think those are like and one, based on my knowledge at the time of
Okay. You know your basketball shorts.
Disco tells the MIA to suck it, so they try to get into the ring.
Classic.
Loco head scissors Disco to the floor, and the MIA just beat him down.
So I guess this is a lumberjack
match? No, it's not. It's just a match.
It sure feels like a lumberjack match.
Chavo counters a back suplex and then hits one of his own. Disco crashes to the floor. Chavo goes to dive on the Filthy Animals, but like only Disco actually stays in position.
Mm.
Like everybody else fucking bails. Like, oh, that kind of sucks. In the ring, Disco hits his dancing Brett's rope elbow drop. And then we get Captain Rection's dad coming out to ringside.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, so this came back on Thunder, but I say came back because we had like one instance of it months ago.
Oh.
Basically, it's like, isn't dementia a funny concept?
Oh, that's great.
Well, unrelated to the character not knowing things, he does come out 5 minutes early.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Because he hits on Tigress and then gets pushed over and is passed out. That was supposed to like play into the finish.
Oh, no.
So he's
nobody
just
stopped
there.
Him in Gorilla? Nobody stopped him?
They have to be watching the show in Gorilla, Emily, for that.
Good point.
Hoovy comes in the ring, hits a reverse neck breaker. The ref's back is like turned for this.
Okay, this makes a lot more sense now because Juventud is interfering poorly for a lot of this. So if he's trying to buy time and like make things make sense, I get that more now.
No, this was definitely still planned.
Oh, Jesus.
If anything, you don't do that spot if he's there early. But yeah, so Hoovy hits a neck breaker. Chavo dodges a people elbow. Disco hits the last dance. Corporal Cajun comes in and hits, I guess, what might be Whiplash 2000 on Disco. The referee finally turns around right in time to see Corporal Cajun pulling Chavo on top of Disco. And he's like, oh, that's fine.
One, two, three. Sure.
Yeah, so Lieutenant Loco retains. The Filthy Animals beat down MIA post-match. Then for some reason, the MIA then regroup to do their post-match angle with Pops, is his
Pops,
his dad's name. And she goes to do her whole sexy rip the shirt routine. And Mark Madden actually had a good line
here. Probably line of the night. While this man is unconscious and everyone's like, he needs CPR. And Major Guns is, you know, doing her sexy thing. Mark Madden yells, "A man is dying and she's stripping."
She gets a mouth-to-mouth for a fucking while, and he eventually gets up and, like, tries to get up on Major Guns, but the MIA pull him away.
Cool. Assault.
Jesus Christ.
We love it. What a time to be alive. What a way to start a pay-per-view.
This match did make me actually be able to pinpoint my issues with the lax rules in WCW.
And
all this bullshit.
This pinpoints it. Sure.
So the first part of this is, he gets thrown out of the ring, they attack him, it's fine.
Yeah.
But then they do the spot where the referee is distracted so we can sneak in behind his back. The fundamentals of wrestling psychology and cheating and interference just seem to pop in and out of existence. Mm. It's like in the DNA of wrestling, of like, especially tag team wrestling, which this isn't, but similar premise of like the manager's cheating. There's no point for a ref bump or refs to not be looking at stuff because it doesn't matter if they see it. So you're just wasting time and making the kind of the audience look like feel stupid for like, oh, ref's down. Doesn't matter. You can just come in and do what you want. So why does it, literally the counting of the three is the only time that like a ref bump would matter if you have somebody down. Other than that, interference-wise, there is no consequence to a ref seeing something or not. And it makes, frankly, the baby faces look stupid most of the time because they're not just interfering. And, like, they're getting stopped. It's like, why are you stopping them? It just breaks the unwritten rules of wrestling where, like, the heels and faces barely, I mean, it matters from, like, a rivalry perspective. But, like, in terms of in-ring psychology, it doesn't matter because people are just... Faces are doing heel shit, heels are doing face shit.
Mm.
And like, I mean, I could play about Hulk Hogan do that, but everyone's doing that now. And it hurts the story of a match when everybody can just cheat.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That actually does make a lot more sense, honestly. Because I have been annoyed at your like frustration of, oh, well, they're lax rules, whatever. That actually does put a lot more things into perspective of your perspective.
I also forget when it is, but later in the show, Tony Schiavone's like, "Here, this is the great thing about the lax rules," and it's while a babyface is getting double teamed, and I'm like, "What do you mean that's the good?"
That's the best part. Cool, but no, that makes sense. Like we have these predetermined roles in wrestling, and making these rules not matter kind of nullifies those predetermined roles.
Admittedly, it makes doing heel turns and face turns a little harder.
True. But they don't really do heel and face turns.
Well, I'll see you in the main event.
Okay. But with all of this said, you can't give me shit anymore for not knowing who the heel and who the face is. You just can't. Because you just said that it's nullifying and it doesn't matter anymore.
Storyline-wise, it's still written in a way that...
Sure.
For the most part.
But you can't call me out for not knowing in the ring who's the heel and who's the face.
Well, you know, it's no Vader, Big Boss Man.
That was hard.
To be fair, at that point, Big Boss Man had not cooked and eaten a dog.
Okay, well, I only know him in the post-Pepper era.
The Boss Man era's tour. Backstage, Eric Bischoff and the Cat chat with police. Goldberg definitely isn't showing up tonight.
Definitely not. No, we would stop him.
He's going to ruin the surprise. So... we'll get the surprise actually in the main event. I guess mild spoilers, they call it off at one point. But apparently, at one point in time, the surprise was going to be, yes, we've sold to SFX.
Oh, you mentioned this company last time we talked.
Yes. I didn't realize they got to that stage. They're like, we can announce that. And like, no.
So they actually got that far in the sale.
It's vague because it seems like someone who didn't have the authority may have been negotiating. And then people who had the authority went, no.
Interesting.
That will be a common theme with WCW. We then get Mean Gene backstage with the Mamalukes.
Hey, yo, hey, yeah, the Paisans. Hey, yay, oh, hey. It's been a while since we've been able to do that.
Well, Gene's just not been on Nitro. But yeah, they yell at Gene. Vito claims he's the hardcore champion. And Gene's kind of like, well, what about John to the Bull? And they just kind of brush it off. Vito also talks about the county jail and Stugatz.
Did he get arrested in storyline? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
Well, because he was wearing a shirt that was like county jail.
I think it's just mafia.
Ah, okay.
So they go to leave when Gene like starts stirring the pot. And even Gene at the end is like, oh, I'm walking here.
Hey, yo, way,
where did I come from, Gene?
Hey, guys, hey.
Now we get the actual main event of the show. Emily, if you order the Great American Bash, you can get a Hulkster inflatable raft.
Wow.
You did a little too much searching on this.
I wanted to see what it looked like. And unfortunately, I have come up short. Because on every forum and thread and stuff from even 2001 or 2000 that I can find, it is only pictures of this thing folded up. And I've only seen like two pictures of somebody posting that this is folded up in a piece of plastic, cellophane, whatever. No one has inflated it. I haven't seen a single picture of this thing inflated.
I also raised a good question when this one popped up that we haven't actually asked before. Shouldn't you advertise this before the show?
I've definitely brought this up with like the mouse pad and the teddy bear and the t-shirt and everything. I've always thought that because advertising this prize during it is kind of stupid because you've already paid for it. This should be an incentive to buy the pay-per-view.
Yeah, I think that part of the issue is that they advertise it as if you buy, not since you bought.
Correct. Yeah. It's not a reward. It's an incentive, the way that they speak about it.
Let's go to match number two. It's the Mamalukes versus Chronic.
Chronic.
In a number one contenders match, despite the fact that the powers to be do not want Chronic to hold the titles.
They don't really seem to give a shit if Mamalukes do either. Nobody cares.
They all brawl to start, and Vito is wrestling wearing the hardcore title for a while.
Oh, was he? I didn't even catch that.
Oh, yeah. It's a whole thing.
Oh, shit.
Well, he's also on the apron for a lot of this. Brian Clark works over Johnny the Bull in the corner and stops a combination with the Uranage. Clark then works Johnny the Bull over around ringside. Johnny the Bull hits a slow spin kick and then tags in Vito. They then go back to the corner and Vito hits strikes. Clark hits a sloppy tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. Adams tags in, hits a full Nelson slam. Clark hits a choke slam on Johnny the Bull. And then we get a random Vito sucks chant. I was like, oh.
Yeah, you don't hear that very often. And I don't really understand where or why it happened. Fuck Vito, I guess.
Johnny the Bull finally gets a bit of offense, but Adams gorilla presses Johnny the Bull and drops him onto his knee. Johnny hits a DDT and Vito tags in and we go right back to the corners. Clark just walks into the ring for a double back body drop. Like, not even like a fake tag or anything. Just, oh, I'm in now.
Yeah.
Does it and then just leaves. Just like, what the fuck?
The rules are lax. Doesn't matter.
Then be in the ring the whole time. Then we get a really scary spot in this match of Bryan Adams has started doing an F5.
Mm.
I guess Vito was not told how to take this.
Oh, no.
Because he, like, drops him on his fucking head.
Oh, yeah, this was scary. This could have very easily broken his neck.
Luckily, he's, like, up and fine in a second later. Yeah. But it was, like, even the crowd was like, oh, fuck. Like,
yeah.
Crowd is dead for this.
Yeah.
That was for a lot of the show, but yeah. That was just everybody going, oh, my God.
So it's funny that people were so dead. The audience was so dead for this show. Because the Raw that we just went to in Baltimore, in the exact same arena, was probably one of the loudest wrestling shows I've ever been to.
Yeah.
So this arena and this fan base can get loud. They just don't care.
Johnny the Bull hits a power slam and then takes a while to set up a diving move. Like, he keeps, like, pulling Brian Clark around, like, where do I want to hit it?
Yeah.
He then fucks up his jump to the top rope.
So, like, oh,
then,
yeah.
And then misses his dive by a fucking mile.
So all that showboating for nothing, for a botched jump, and then you missed by a country mile.
Yeah. I mean, he was really just setting up for a killer move because, Emily, I don't know if you know this, but Johnny the Bull goes on to wrestle as Relic.
I never actually loved you, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but... I'm taking the dog.
Relic is race car spelled backwards. Vito just goes to ringside at this point to go play with his belt. Chronic fucks around for a while.
And then he finds out.
And then eventually they, like, fumble around and hit the high time because Bryan Adams goes to do it. And, like, Brian Clark's on the other side of him. And Bryan Adams refuses to move.
Yeah,
so Brian Clark has to, like, step around
him.
No, I'm on this side.
This is my good side.
They hit the high times for the win. This was very bad.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are sleepwalking with no fucking chemistry.
It's incredibly boring.
Like, we've joked, like, oh, you know, it's not a great match, but it's Flair and Sting, and they, you know, they're going to have a good match in their sleep. I don't think these guys have a good match awake, and they were asleep.
Ugh. It was really bad. And it did kind of set, like, if that first match didn't set the tone for the show, this definitely did.
Yeah, and like the crowd goes to sleep here, and they don't really wake up until the end. They have a spot or two, but yeah, this is a bad sign. Doesn't help you also open with two barely advertised matches, if at all.
Yeah.
Because we'll talk about that when we get to the Hogan and Flair matches, but this show is like laid out strangely.
It is, and it really doesn't make any sense. Like, strange is the right word for it. Like, I can't think of a better word. Because it does not make any sense linearly or storytelling-wise. It is. It's just a strange show. But it doesn't help any of the energy either, because the energy never changes. Speaking of energy.
Backstage, Pamela Paulshock interviews DDP for his ambulance match.
His ambulance match. And she's not misspeaking. She keeps saying it like that.
I almost think you're adding an extra syllable. I think she was even more wrong. I swear she said ambulance.
I think she just did ambulance. Ambulance.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was very wrong. It was like a 3-year-old learning how to say an ambulance. But
So DDP calls her a bimbo. And it says that Mike Awesome is not a career killer when she starts to say, like, wait, what are you going to say? It's a career killer? Nah.
It's like she forgot what she was supposed to say, or I'm not even going to give her that much credit.
Get her
She's
role
just
here.
Bad at her job.
And everyone's job seems to be mean to her. Where I'm like, is this going to pay off to anything, or is this just...
This interaction in particular felt like Pamela Pumpkins was given talking points and she did not hit them. So DDP came in and was like, I guess I'm going to do your job for you. You're going to ask me about the career killer, right? Well, let me tell you. Like, that's how it felt to me. It felt like you're on stage with somebody and they forgot their line, so you have to feed yourself a line.
Well, speaking of career killers, they then back up the ambulance and, like, almost run over the cameraman. Like, they're going fast.
Yeah, they were.
And he's in the way.
He was not moving.
But that brings us to match number 3. It's Mike Awesome versus DDP in a, quote, ambulance match.
Ambulance.
Because, actually, you know what it is? We've seen a bunch of ambulance matches on TV. Mm-hmm. This is not that. This is an ambulance match, because this is an ambulance match combined with the weird stretcher match where the referees have to, like, wheel you up. Like, your opponent doesn't.
Yeah, so that's a stretcher match, right?
Yes, but there also still is the element of you have to be put in the ambulance. Additionally, I didn't really see a ramp or, like, any way to get down from the stage once you were off the stretcher. So there is that. I guess you had to, like, wheel off to the side.
Yeah, I think it was just don't go up the ramp, just go around. But to me, this is not an ambulance match. This is a stretcher match.
Yeah.
But I guess it's not an ambulance match because it's an ambulance match.
Mike Awesome has a different theme song on Peacock for this. Don't really know why.
Yeah.
DDP brings out Canyon and then just, like, leaves him on the stage.
Canyon, who looks like he is still in a vegetative state, but they've just put him in a wheelchair for some reason. He's wearing the halo still. He just has, like, a dead look on his face. And he's just sitting very rigidly in the wheelchair, just sitting at the top of the ramp.
He's no Linda McMahon.
Canyon walked so Linda could run.
Kenya walks so Linda could walk even slower. And then say, open your legs.
What?
During that spot, she has to, like, tell Vince, open your legs so I can low blow you because you're standing.
I thought you were making a sexual joke.
No,
with McMahon's,
no.
You never know.
No, she has to call the spot in the ring.
Yeah, be careful with the McMahon's.
But commentary is like, is it really safe for him to be out there?
No, it is not.
Yeah. They start brawling, and DDP just, like, punches the ref.
Out of, like, immediately.
Yeah. Admittedly, I don't know why the ref's here. Going back to our weird things about the rules, what is the purpose of the ref here? And we'll get into this even more later. What is the purpose of refs in matches like this?
Fair. I think referees in these kinds of matches are more timekeepers than they are referees. Like, in non-kayfabe, you know? Like, reality.
How about on the outside?
Yeah.
They go to ringside and then into the crowd for a second in a spot we get a lot tonight.
Yeah.
They then lightsaber fight with chairs in the ring.
And I love
DDP
that.
hits a neck snap. Awesome hits a diving back elbow, back suplex, and a jumping splash. Awesome then drops DDP on the ropes and sets up a table at ringside. Almost immediately, Awesome just hits an awesome bomb through the table at ringside. I'm like, oh, okay.
That's it. Table down.
And this is where we note that this is now a stretcher match.
Yeah, because they put him on the stretcher and start wheeling him out. Because, like, the difference is with an ambulance versus a stretcher match, the wrestler that they are fighting has to put the other in the ambulance, right?
Technically, that's still how this ends, but...
But the referees are the ones wheeling the stretcher.
Yeah.
So kind of not.
Yeah. We don't get to that point, because DDP, like, slips off the stretcher before that.
Yeah.
Mike Awesome hits a chair shot to the back and then a few to the ribs in the ring. Awesome hits a frog splash and then another, and he goes for a third with a chair on DDP, but DDP moves. We then get Kimberly running out to the ring with a lead pipe.
Big air quotes.
Hits DDP across the back, and you can see the thing bend.
You can literally see it wobble like rubber.
It's a fucking pool noodle.
It's a pool noodle.
Miss Hancock then runs out to drag Kimberly away.
Were you kind of sad for Stacey Keibler in this moment? This was the only time that she was on the show, and it's a hometown show. She's from Baltimore.
Yeah, the thing
that
is...
That kind of sucks.
Yeah, the thing is, the other option is she's not on the show.
Yeah.
Or she tries to wrestle.
They did that stupid dance spot last episode. Why can't they do something like that again? She got more screen time then than here.
Hold on. You're saying that was a good thing. They should do that
again. Saying it was more screen time. If she's a hometown hero or whatever you want to say, give her some more screen time.
This was short and sweet. Let's leave it what it is. Ugh. Mike Awesome then gets bold, and he goes, what if I go for a top rope Awesome Bomb? And by that, I mean he is standing on the top rope, and his plan is to rotate DDP up while balancing on the ropes.
Bestie.
Like, I think they've done, like, modified versions of this from, like, the second rope. Or, like, I think they've kind of done it before, but I don't think he rotates from there.
Mike Awesome has never had the core strength to be able to do that.
I don't know.
You know.
Or maybe after DDP. To Spike Dudley, probably.
Okay, Spike Dudley is like 100 pounds soaking wet, sure. DDP is 6'5" and like 250 pounds.
DDP gets out of this by low-blowing Mike Awesome. Then hits a diamond cutter, and this is enough to, like, knock Mike Awesome out. Because the EMTs take Awesome up the ramp. And then we get Eric Bischoff's music hitting, and he immediately goes after Canyon, so DDP tackles Eric Bischoff.
Sure, save his friend.
In the side of the frame, Canyon casually stands up, takes off his halo, and hits a diamond cutter on DDP through tables off the stage.
The way he stood up was very Linda McMahon, though.
I was saying, he stood up like corner of the frame. Like the diamond cutter is obviously in the center, but...
Yeah, when he got up, you're right, it was off-frame, but
it
the way he
so
stood
quick.
Up...
quick. That's the problem. Like, you barely realize what the fuck's happening, and then it's happening.
Yeah, that's true. I did have to catch it on the replay.
Canyon then puts DDP on a stretcher, and Mike Awesome throws DDP into the ambulance and wins. Eric Bischoff's music is playing from when he comes out until the match ends.
Yes.
Post-match, Canyon reveals a new blood shirt.
The reasoning behind this, which I think we'll get in a little while, is so gross and so disgusting.
This is the third show in a row where DDP has been turned on by a close friend and/or wife.
Stops. Why does this why is this DDP's character for multiple years of his career?
You know what it is? That everybody keeps finding out he's like a sick stalker. He's keeping on the low with the fans, but his friends are finding out. Like,
oh my god.
Who's this Sarah? It's like, you're married to Kimberly. Like,
who's Sarah?
Match-wise, this was disappointing.
It was. It should have been better.
As someone who's liked a lot of both of these guys' stuff, especially recently, I was like, it's kind of nothing.
I'm a Mike Awesome hater, and it's been said and it's been known. You love him, and you love DDP, so this should have been better.
Yeah.
It was not.
I was ready. I'm like, oh, well, this is like automatically best bit. But yeah, the Canyon turn is weird, bad,
you
and
saw
dumb.
It coming, though.
Just because I saw it coming doesn't make it weird, bad, and dumb.
No, that's true. But it was not unexpected.
Yeah, I think DDP shows up tomorrow, but he's gone for a few months after that.
I don't blame him.
Commentary then recaps the swerve just to get you like caught up of like, they start speculating, and this is like a type of swerve where you really shouldn't think about it at all.
Correct. Don't give it any thought.
Because Tony's like, how long have they been planning this? And like, they're like, I wonder if it's Slamboree, if Canyon was going to attack DDP and Mike Awesome just beat him to the punch.
It's like, no.
No.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure if we go back and watch the replay, it's just like very much not what happened.
Well, it's 2000, so you probably don't have the opportunity to watch the replay.
You have to spend 40 big ones for that. Let's go to a match I did not know what the actual rules were going to be. It's the boot camp match.
I don't think anybody knew what the rules were going to be.
It is G.I. Bro versus Perfect Sean.
Sean Stasiak versus Booker T. Shut up.
Booker comes out riding a zip line to the ring.
This was almost cool.
So I guess whoever tested it does not weigh as much as Booker T. Because Booker T, the built dude.
Yeah, he's a big guy. He was moving a little slow.
Yeah, he's no Big Cash in terms of like how big he is, but like,
sure,
he's bigger than your average crew member.
Yeah.
Because he gets a good amount of the way and then he has to kind of like...
like scooch himself.
Yeah, scooch himself. But he does manage to like stop on the top rope, like on the middle of the top rope, and pyro goes off. I'm like,
it was pretty cool.
Fuck, that's pretty cool. Okay.
He saved it.
Yeah.
It was a very cool entrance. Do you fear the timeliness of it was bad? Or has it been enough time?
I think in reality, he was low enough. I mean, it's still not great.
Yeah.
I don't know how much time needs to pass post Owen for that. But, I mean, we've done worse last show.
True.
So, I didn't really have a problem with it.
Fair. Okay. I was just curious what your thoughts were because it is close, like, in the calendar, you know?
Yeah. It is about a year later.
Yeah.
So Booker's wearing his, like, you know, camo stuff, no face paint. But Sean Stasiak also comes out in camo and is rocking the face paint.
Yeah,
no, no top on him. Breaking his mother's heart.
It was really hard to keep track of these two in the match.
He says he's going to be the...
I couldn't find him.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Butts in the Seats podcast. Next up is the June 12th Nitro. Emily's going to take this one the rest of the way on her own.
Nick hates it when I make camo jokes.
By the way, the boot camp rules are it's last man standing. Oh, and Sean Stasiak says he's going to be the perfect soldier.
The perfect Sean soldier. Soldier. Perfect.
Yeah, that's the one to give up on, not the other one. They brought Ryan ringside until Booker gets beat down, getting in the ring. This is a spot they also go to a couple times tonight and in general where it's the... I have worked you over outside of the ring. I throw you in the ring. You've instantly recovered.
Yeah.
That is a 2K24 move where it's like, I have enough stamina. Ah, get up.
Recover.
Booker regains control and sends Stasiak back to the floor. They brawl into the first row and a woman is thrilled to be on the screen.
Oh, I didn't catch her.
I put her out because her husband is like, hey, there's the camera. You can look at the camera. And she just keeps dancing, looking at the screen like, yeah.
Oh, yes, she is very cute.
I don't know what that needs to be studied in the human condition. What about being on a video screen is, let me dance and look stupid.
I feel like it's narcissism.
Oh, there was a kid next to us at the Raw we just went to that he had like Jey Uso signs.
Yeah.
And they put him up on the screen for one of the like early ones. And then he kept going after it. And I'm like, bud, they already got you. They're not going to.
It was really cute, it was though. Cute.
He was trying, but I'm like, dude, you already got your one. They're not going to go to you again.
It was very sweet, though. Like, that kid was so excited to be there.
Yeah, he was a lot better than the transphobe a couple rows behind us.
Yeah.
Got to shut that shit down.
That was fun. Yeah, Nick and his mom went after this transphobe. It was really great.
I just stared him down and he shut the fuck up.
Yeah, your mom had words for him. It was really funny.
Back in the ring, Booker hits a sloppy diving axe handle, and somewhere around here, Stasiak starts bleeding.
Yeah, like for real bleeding. But he's covered in camouflage, so it is hard to see.
Yeah, that I will give you. It blends into the camo.
Yeah, see, that wasn't even a camouflage joke. That was just color joke. Color theory joke. Oh, my God.
Stasiak starts a 10-punch spop and drops Booker on the turnbuckle. Stasiak hits a jumping back elbow, which knocks Booker down for an 8 count. Did not seem like a big spot for that. Like, our first count of the day was, like, back elbow.
This match was so annoying with the count, though.
Yeah.
Like, I recognize that is the entire point of a last man standing match, is to count and keep them down for 10. The referee was going to it so quickly and so often and so loudly. It was just very frustrating.
I think part of the problem is that last man standing matches usually have some gravitas from the story.
Mm-hmm.
This just didn't have that.
Yeah, there was, like, very little, if any, story going into this.
Spin kick from Booker gets a 5 count, and then brawl up the ramp, and Booker gets suplexed on the metal portion of the ramp, and like, ooh, but he's up at 8. Stasiak hits a diving clothesline, but Booker is up at 9. Booker hits a suplex, then it immediately is hit with a big clothesline. They go back into the front row for a second. Stasiak hits a padded chair shot to the back, but Booker is up at 9 again. Gut-wrench powerbomb from Stasiak also gets a 9 count, and then we get a Glargay sleeper, and we get the arm drops. And would you believe it, Booker powers up on the third one. And I'm like,
what?
It was kind of weird to get the arm drops in a last man standing kind of match.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess that is a don't kill him.
It is its own version of being counted out, I guess. Like, yeah. You get three if you don't respond, you know.
Yeah, I guess that would be he went to a referee stoppage.
Exactly. It's like, I get the frustration with it, but
yeah, it just seemed like, frustration's relative. It just seemed like a weird spot to do in this one. But yeah, Booker gets up immediately. Booker hits an angle slam before that's really a thing, but then walks into a back elbow. Harlem sidekick, and the crowd is dead. Yeah. A bookend gets a bit more reaction, but not much.
Not much.
Booker starts climbing the turnbuckle mid-count, and I'm like, yeah, clearly he's going to get up. Missile dropkick. Chuck Palumbo then runs out with a muscle flexor, but Booker fights him off. Sazak hits a low blow with a flexor, and Booker's getting double-teamed as Tony says, this is what the lax rules are all about.
He also refers to it as good, clean fun.
Booker hits a double clothesline and a spin-a-rooney. Scott Hudson then remarks, we're almost 20 minutes into this war. This match goes like 13:58.
And it's not over yet.
Booker fights off both men, hits a big muscle flexor shot to Stasiak's head for the 10 count and the win.
Woo.
I say this as a compliment. Well, a backhanded compliment. This is the best Sean Stasiak match I think I've ever seen.
You said that in the night too. Like, you're probably not wrong. And this is definitely the best match on the card so far.
Yeah, I enjoy this. I mean, I'm fine with the counting and all that. I think you could have used some bigger spots for the counts. Like I said, it's like back elbow, like it's like a scoop slam, count them. Like, I feel like they could have had a couple more interesting spots, but...
And the other thing that frustrates me with the counting is when the person who's hit is so clearly getting up quick. Like when Booker is climbing the ropes, he's obviously getting up. Like, don't count it. And he's getting up quickly. It's just, like, taking time to stand up. It's not like he's down and out. Like, he's not going to make it up. He's working on standing up.
When the count is actually longer, it has been, like, remarked on from commentary teams before of, like, if you get up at one, you're back up and, like, getting hit. So, like, taking your time almost lets you catch your breath for a second.
Okay, I guess that's fair. I didn't think about it like that.
But, yeah, I mean, Booker's able to have a good match with a lot of people.
Yeah, he is.
The ending did feel kind of rushed, that it was like, I feel like Booker got hit with like a bunch of muscle flexor shots, and then he hits one, and that's it.
Yeah. I don't know. I was so over this match by the ending that I was not giving it a lot of critical thought.
Yeah. I did not need Chuck Palumbo here either, but...
Who are you, Chuck Palumbo?
He's The Event.
Which is just such a bad name.
He's, I can't make it on the actual event. I can just interfere. We go backstage. Mean Gene asks Canyon.
Why?
It's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. Oh, wait, no, sorry. That was Arn Anderson hitting a DDT
on
a man who probably shouldn't have trusted him. Canyon says it's because Eric Bischoff visited him the most in the hospital.
What?
And he offered him DDP's spot.
Canyon was comatose. How does he know who visited him the most? Why didn't a doctor mention how many people came? Why didn't he look at a guest log?
No, he was conscious. Just
was
like,
he?
Yeah. Like, just that, like, barely able to move kind of thing.
He was comatose.
No. Gene then like throws to random footage of DDP getting out of the ambulance. And in the background, we see Goldberg's monster truck, but that's not all we see. We see 12 cops looking at Goldberg's monster truck and not reacting.
Classic Baltimore cops.
But Canyon says he's now positively Canyon.
Yet again, we have somebody stealing someone else's gimmick.
Yep.
And not having anything original.
At least one of these men is not coming back.
Jesus.
Like, Luger and DDP will be back. Kurt Hennig's not coming back.
True.
Let's go to match number 5. It is an infamous match.
Is this infamous?
Yes, because it is Shane Douglas versus The Wall in a tables match. Shane Douglas comes out, cut the damn music. You Baltimore pieces of shit, sit down.
Hey, you're not wrong, but hey.
Shane Douglas then talks about we might see two careers come to an end tonight. And I'm like, bud, you're not in those matches. Focus on your shit.
But he's the franchise. He's every match.
Yeah, he finally pivots to his opponent tonight, The Wall. And he pitches a best of 5 tables match.
So what does a best of 5 tables match mean to you, Nick?
Well, I'm going to give you one answer now. And then in 5 minutes, I'm going to tell you what the actual rules are.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Because that's what happened with commentary here. Because commentary is like, is it five tables to win or three tables to win?
They kept saying they're going to go through five tables.
Yes.
And if it's a best of five, they only have to go through three tables.
Shane Douglas is just very not confident in himself and knows it's going to come down to the final table.
I mean, probably. But I was just... I also would not put it past them to say the wrong thing and say the first person to put you through five tables wins the best of five match, you know? Like, in my head, that sounds like something WCW would do.
No, the WCW thing would be someone puts their opponent through three tables, but then the match keeps going so that technically someone wins, but then the other one's standing tall because they put him through the last table.
Yeah.
That would be the stupid bullshit they'd do.
That sounds like story bullshit, though. I'm just saying that they don't know what words mean.
In a questionable move, The Wall comes out with a new look.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's not a great look.
He dyed his hair. Now The Wall is sporting black hair, and he looks even more generic. He does not look bigger. He does not look more tough. He looks generic.
Yeah, and he's just rocking like plain black pants and like a tank top. Like,
there's nothing to this.
Or, like some sort of like band logo or something on the tank top. Yeah, he's not terribly interesting looking here. Big boot from The Wall early on, and he hits a press slam. The Wall pushes Douglas off a swinging neck breaker and then punches Douglas down, but Douglas hits a high knee, then rakes the eyes and hits a front falling suplex and a rolling reverse neck breaker. It's not really a spot I see a lot.
No.
I see it like, you see it the other way, but not the way he did it. They go to ringside and brawl a little bit. Douglas goes for a suplex through the table, but The Wall counters and hits a choke slam through the table. 1-0 Wall. And we know this because referee Slick Johnson goes right to the camera. Is like, 1-0.
Oh my God, he was looking for his 15 minutes of fame in that moment because he was eating that up.
The Wall then hits a side suplex through another table. 2-0 Wall. And this is where commentary finally is like, oh, it's first of three. Okay.
So which one of you is stupid? Like, somebody in this is stupid. Is it Mark
all
Madden?
All of them. They I were all saying it. Because once they started saying the first of five, they all were on board with it.
And yeah.
Like, someone finally got in their ear, which admittedly, who backstage wasn't sure and had to wait that long to clarify?
God. Math is not their strong suit, I guess.
Douglas hits a low blow in the ring and then bails up the ramp to a side area with a bunch of tables.
Conveniently, there are three stacked on top of each other. And a ladder.
Yeah.
How convenient.
Even more convenient, they both climb the ladder.
Wow.
Why?
And even more convenient, The Wall's back is to the tables. Huh.
Yeah, there's a stack of like, I think it's two tables vertically on top of two tables horizontally.
Okay.
Because there is a little platform or something. I think that is another table. Because yeah, they both climb up the ladder. The Wall tries for a choke slam off the ladder. And it's like, where is he going to land
that won't
murder him?
Right.
Because the other thing is, they're saying, is The Wall going to somehow chokeslam Shane Douglas over his head to, like, behind him?
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not. Douglas uses brass knuckles from somewhere, and The Wall falls through what is initially an unclear amount of tables, but Shane Douglas's music hits, so I guess it was three.
Yeah, I guess that was enough. It was a lot of tables. So.
Even in the replay, because one of them is under a cloth, you don't really see it break. They do the replay a bunch. The Wall overshot this a little bit. He could have taken that a lot more smooth and soft. He kind of goes ass over teakettle a little bit at the end, but not bad enough to where I was like, oh my God. It was like, ooh, okay. But so yeah, Shane Douglas has won the best of five tables match. He cuts a promo to camera, but it's a dub theme, so we don't hear any of it.
No, yeah, he's just talking. I wish I could hear it. I want somebody who's like a professional lip reader to transcribe that for me.
I did not try to read lips, but I'm going to do my best guess of, fuck you, Ric Flair, I hope you retire.
He wasn't even part of this.
Made the first part of the promo.
Oh my God. I hate the french fries so much.
Post-match, The Wall grabs the ref and chokeslams him through another table to make him look strong.
You.
Yeah, this is just more infamous for best of fucking five tables match. What the fuck? You know what's better than one gimmick? Five gimmicks.
Jesus.
In terms of actual match, it was fine. Nothing special.
It was not anything special, which is frustrating because this did get ECW chance at some point. I'm like, what? Why? This does not warrant that. Just because there was a table involved does not mean
Shane Douglas is the first ECW champion?
I don't care because he is not that anymore. He is not in WCW what he was in ECW. I didn't like him then. I don't like him now, but he's not who he was. He is the french fries, and he's gross, and I hate him.
Outside, a car arrives. It's Hollywood Hogan in full Hollywood Hogan gear, like, but with the boas.
In order to make way for the Hollywood Hogan car, this cop car in front of the gate, in center frame of the screen, has to, like, I wrote, the cop car yeets itself out of the way.
Yeah, it peels it out backwards.
Bam, like, out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, this car comes through. It just was so silly.
I don't get why we had to see this. I think the Goldberg monster truck might still be in the background. I don't know.
I didn't write that it loomed, but it may have. But, like, I guess I'm getting kind of tired of always having to watch people arrive.
Yeah. I assume
that
you're
here. Exhausted. Yeah. And, like, we don't really do that in 2024. We do a little bit, but it's not on the shows or the pay-per-views as often. They are, like, part
what,
of the story
what they'll
sometimes.
Do now is they've started just doing it at the beginning of, like, hey, here's who's here. They arrived earlier.
Sure.
Because also, it does beg the thing of, like, all right, what if Hogan had to open the show?
Right.
Honestly, tweet in if that's ever come up in wrestling. I think we might have asked this before, but has there been an instance where somebody arrives late and it's like, okay, you had a match. You lost. Sorry. You lost by forfeit because...
I don't think that's ever happened because it's storyline.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, in kayfabe.
You think has that been written?
Yeah, I want to know if that's ever actually happened.
I don't know. I could see, like, a smaller promotion doing it.
Ooh, match number 6.
Oh, God, I don't want to do this.
It's Tank Abbott versus Scott Steiner in an asylum match, technically for the U.S. title.
This is quickly becoming, if it's not already become, my least favorite kind of match. I can't tell you a single thing about this match
for.
Because it is so boring and is so uninteresting to watch.
Both men come out. They start brawling before the cell even lowers. And Scott Steiner starts hitting belly-to-belly suplexes. As Dave Penzer announces, this is now going to be a handicap match with Rick Steiner.
God.
So now there's going to be 3 men in this tiny-ass cage.
The tiny thing to make it a level playing field.
They beat down Scott with strikes. Shakira and Medeja taunt Rick and Tank from the apron. Rick hits an elbow drop, low blow. And then they go for the I'm going to hold him up, you punch him. But Tank Abbott has a chain. Rick Steiner's like, well, this is my brother. Let's not murder him. Like, we just want to beat him down a little bit. So Tank's like, okay, I won't use the chain. And then immediately puts the chain back on. And in a weird spot, he hits Rick Steiner, who I think just because it happened so quick is like almost starting to push Scott out of the way. So he gets hit. But then afterwards, Tank Abbott like stomps Rick Steiner. So I'm like, did you just mean to hit him anyway? Or...
I don't know. The fact that this was like a gimmick within a gimmick with a storyline match, but like there's not really wrestling here. And what was the point?
Scott locks in a Steiner recliner on Tank and wins.
Yeah. Who cares? This was so boring. And it wasn't even really a wrestling match. It was just like 3 guys in a ring and let's have some other shenanigans happen.
At least it was short. It was like 3
minutes. It was short. You're right. That is a blessing.
It was dumb though.
Yes. This one hurt my brain.
But yeah, that was a title match.
Yeah, what the fuck?
In the parking lot, a limo arrives. It's Ric Flair and his family.
The Flairs.
This is where you actually see Goldberg's truck looming.
Yes, it rolls in the background. Just looming in the back.
We then get a very brief Hogan versus Kidman package.
Oh my God.
They have
nothing. Care.
There's no story anymore.
There never really was a story.
Well, there was last time, and then...
God, you mean like 6 weeks ago?
And then everybody was feuding with different people, and they went, oh yeah, there's still a match.
Oh my God, who cares?
Mean Gene is with Hollywood Hogan. Hogan says they can stick around as long as they want. Aren't you about to wrestle a retirement match?
Correct.
Hogan calls Kidman a flea market champion, and Gene notes his new look, and Hogan's like... You have to reinvent yourself in this business. I'm like, you're just reverting back to the NWO
shit.
This
isn't reinventing.
This is my new invention, brother. I call it the wheel. But that brings us to Kidman versus Hollywood Hogan with special guest referee Horace Hogan.
Yay, Hogan's.
So,
Jesus Christ.
What has been the story with Horace Hogan in the past few weeks?
Honestly, I don't remember.
He joined the New Blood by turning on Hulk Hogan.
Sure.
And then he kind of was trying to steal Tori.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole, like, pseudo-cheating thing with Tori and Kidman and Hogan. Like, love triangle. That is, I guess, not a thing?
Yes, because Tori does not come out with Kidman.
No. But she also doesn't come out with Horace.
Yes. Well, Tori low-blowed Kidman, so they're, like, clearly broke up. So, yeah. Remember
Done.
That. Match starts. Hogan easily overpowers Kidman early on. Kidman begs off, keeps getting worked over. Big boot, no reaction.
Nothing.
Hogan beats down Kidman at ringside. Hogan chokes Kidman on the mat and then gets mad when Horace tells him to stop cheating. Somehow, the most fair referee in all this is Horace Hogan.
He's not actually a referee. He doesn't understand the rules are lax, brother.
Kidman finally rakes the eyes and gets him offense. Kidman is mad that Horace Hogan is actually officiating being fair. Hogan low blows Kidman and then whips him with a belt repeatedly. Horace Hogan, who is supposed to be new blood for life, is fine with this.
Sure.
At ringside, Hogan grabs a chair, but Kidman drop kicks it into Hulk and then hits chair shots to the back of Hogan. I think this is where the chair almost ends up, like, in the front row.
Oh, yeah.
Hogan kicks out of a fair count and they brawl more around ringside. Hogan hits a chair shot, throws the chair back in the ring. Kidman DDTs Hogan on the chair, but man, that bump did not work for him, brother.
No.
There's like a 2-foot gap in between his head and that fucking chair.
Oh, well, yeah, come on. It's Hogan. Like, he's never going to take a bump like that.
Oh, yeah. You'll be so tight, brother. I know where to go.
Oh, my God. God, I can, like, feel my will to live, like, vanishing out of my body.
Kidman hits a diving splash and then gets mad at Horace for not quick counting. And I'm like, oh, man, I would have loved to have seen Kidman botch a shooting star press on Hogan.
He hasn't done a shooting star press in so long.
Would Hogan have brought out Eric Bischoff to fire Kidman on the spot if he had fucked it up and, like, hurt him?
Oh, if he had hurt him, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, we're hold the match. My creative control says the finish of this match is Billy Kidman is actually fired.
Get the fuck out, William.
Kidman clubs the back of Hogan until he powers up and hits an honest-to-God 10-punch spot.
He actually hits all 10 strikes.
Holy shit.
Haven't seen that in a minute,
if ever. I've never seen
it. Yeah.
We went back to, like, WrestleMania 5, and he's still doing the fucking biting. And I'm like, what the fuck? Back to ringside. Jesus Christ. Hogan gets pushed shoulder first into the ring post. This does not faze him as he immediately hip tosses Billy Kidman through the announce table. Tori Wilson then comes out for some reason. She gets on the apron, gives Hogan brass knucks. Kidman knocks Hogan into her and then uses the knucks on Hogan, but only gets a 2. Kidman hits Horace with the brass knucks, so Tori comes in, low blows Kidman. She's turned on him again.
Again, we've already done this.
Hogan then hits a brass knuckle shot and pins Kidman. Hogan then hides the evidence after, like a fucking heel. But again, why'd you have to hide it if it's fine?
Yeah, now that you pointed out, you're right. You are right, but
Horace raises Hulk's hand and they hug. And it's like, oh, I guess they're on the same page.
I guess they're fine again.
Yeah.
So they're fine again. Tori is with Horace?
No,
I don't think she's just a free agent now?
I'm pretty sure by the next pay-per-view she's with one or two people. I kind of forget, but I'm pretty sure she moves on to different people. Because I want to say Horace is done before the next pay-per-view.
Oh. Like
our last appearance, and then I think after the pay-per-view, he's fully gone.
Mm.
But yeah, this story made no sense in hindsight.
Oh yeah, it all fizzled and none of it really mattered.
It didn't help. They kept asking, will Billy Kidman be Hulk Hogan's stepping stone to the world title? It's like, don't call him a stepping stone.
Yeah.
This don't already feels like a formality. Don't fucking add to that.
Don't actually imply that you're going to walk all over this man.
But yeah, Hulk Hogan has a title shot at the July pay-per-view.
Wow. What's that one called again?
That one will finally be Bash at the Beach 2000.
The Great American Bash at the Beach at the Belle of the Ball.
Backstage, Eric Bischoff is stressed on the phone with somebody. We never know who this is.
So we don't get to find out who it is, but the only clue that I have is he said it's in Michigan. Who's from Michigan?
No, Montana.
I thought they said Michigan.
No, I'm pretty sure he said Montana.
Well, who's from Montana?
Brock Lesnar.
Oh, no.
Eric Bischoff's from Montana. Are we talking to his wife?
Talking to his mom.
I don't know, man. Security comes in, is like, everything's under control. It's like, no, it's not.
It's very clearly not Baltimore City Cap.
Let's move on to match number 8, father versus son, Fleer versus Fleer.
Fleer.
It's David Flair versus Ric Flair. And we get a video package for this. And then Pamela Paulshock just taunting David Flair to his fucking face.
I don't understand this woman.
And Vince Russo's like, this isn't a fairy tale. Go find a pixie.
What?
Okay. And then we got excited.
We got so excited.
And it's a little shorter, but Ric Flair is here with
Mean! Woo! Gee! Are we in Baltimore, Maryland tonight?
It's short and it's clipped, but we still get it.
Yes, he cuts a fired up Flair promo. Because Baltimore is flair country. That is very much like NWA.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, like, what, this is not North Carolina. What do you mean?
No. Just the general, like, old school NWA territory.
Okay.
Rick's family is escorted to ringside. David comes out putting on a Nitro UK tour shirt. I'm like, what the fuck was he wearing in the backstage promo?
I don't remember. I did not make any note of it.
We did set the time to Blade in this match at 6 minutes.
I was so convinced.
No Blade?
There was no blood.
I think they're not supposed to.
Probably not. But it's Ric Flair.
The fact that Hogan didn't, I was like, ooh, I don't know. Rick plays the crowd to start and like is simply out-wrestling David. Until David just hits punches and chops in the corner and Rick screws up his turnbuckle spot. But David throws Rick around the ringside and then hits a suplex back in the ring. And there's never really like a, oh, something happened to like put David on a level playing field. They are just like presenting David as a level playing field.
Yeah, which makes this a way more interesting match, honestly. It came out of nowhere, you're right. But this makes it more interesting.
Get a Glargay sleeper to Rick, but he gets out with the back suplex. Rick then rips David's shirt open and chops him in the corner.
Oh, he chops.
Rick drags David to ringside to chop him a bit more. David distracts the ref so Russo can hit a bat shot, and then he handcuffs Ric Flair. Referee is Charles Robinson, by the way.
Yes, Lil Nate. So we got all the Flairs.
David chops Rick and then locks in the figure four. Russo helps pull from the outside. And
this figure four, like, you can make David look as good as you want in the ring, and you can try to make him look like he's on a level playing field with Rick. This figure four will tell you everything you need to know.
People were complaining about how long Vince Russo lasted in the figure four. Jesus, this is one of two very long figure four spots. We get somehow a longer one later.
But it's also not really a figure four. Like, yeah. This is a very weak figure four. It's played up to be like a strong figure four because Russo is pulling on David to make it stronger or tighter or what have you.
He's pulling off David? Oh.
Okay. But it didn't feel like it was big. I don't know. That being said, I'm enjoying this match very much so far.
Rick reversed the pressure and breaks the hold. David then mounts Ric Flair to hit punches, but like won't get off. So Charles Robinson like forcibly pulls David off of Rick. Reed Flair then uses this distraction to come from the crowd and go after Russo. Russo pushes him over fairly hard.
Mm-hmm.
So Reed comes over and low blows the ever-loving fuck out of Vince Russo.
Good for him.
I don't know if Reed was taught how to do that properly.
I think he just kicked him in the balls.
He steals the handcuff keys. Charles Robinson then uncuffs Rick as David goes after his brother. Rick chops David and hits a back body drop as Charlotte Flair has the handcuffs and goes to handcuff Vince Russo as he calls her a bitch.
You don't even know who you're talking to. That's the 16-time women's champion right there.
Not yet, but
yeah, well,
soon.
Whoa, this was so cool. I love seeing Charlotte Flair in this moment. Like, she's still very young, you know. She's obviously 14. Still Ashley Flair, but like, it's so cool. It's so cool to see the beginnings of her.
It's still wild that, like, at this time, she had, no plans of going into wrestling.
No, because why would she? I'm assuming that what happened is this whole storyline was pitched, and some producer or writer came to the girls, and they're like, do you guys have any interest in being part of this? And the oldest one, what's her name, Megan?
Yeah.
She's like, fuck no, I don't give a shit. And Ashley's like, yeah, all right, whatever. Like, I don't think she was, like, fully in it, but she was like, yeah, okay, I'll play. I don't think Megan gives a shit about any of this.
I think Rick just says, this is what you're doing.
I don't know. I don't think so.
David Flair then also, like, kind of screws up the turnbuckle spot and then gets clotheslined to the floor. Vertical suplex to David, and he begs off. David pokes Rick in the eye and then goes up top, but is thrown off the top rope in a very Rick spot. Knee dropping punches. Rick starts working over the legs for a second, then locks in the figure four, and David gives up. Ric Flair has won. Not have to retire. Oh, yeah, amazing. We glossed over that Hulk Hogan would have had to have retired.
That was never going to happen. This was never going to happen. This actually had more legs that Rick might have lost, but he wasn't going to retire, obviously. We know this. Retirement matches are fucking full of lies and slander and stupidity. But this is a lot of fun to watch. Essentially, having two retirement matches on this card meant nothing.
Yeah.
No one retired.
Well, Rick then brings Russo into the ring, rips his shirt, and chops Russo as the family kind of comes in to celebrate. Post-match, Russo grabs a mic and calls Rick a piece of shit and says tomorrow he's going to retire Ric Flair.
Ooh.
So we're just going to do this again.
We're just going to keep going.
Yeah, this was a fairly fun match.
I like this one a lot.
Yeah, Ric Flair managed to pull a half-decent match out of his son, so props to him.
Yeah, exactly. And like incorporating the rest of the family with the storyline that was going on, it kind of created a good culmination of the storyline.
Yeah, it made sense for the family to get involved and have the nice kind of moment. Speaking of nice moments, it's time for our match number 9.
Oh, God.
It's the Human Torch match.
Finally. So this match has been, again, pumped up for weeks. Like, someone's going to get lit on fire. There's going to be a human on fire in the ring. It's going to be huge. Everything's going to be fire. There's fire everywhere. We've called the Baltimore City Police Department. They're here. They're on site. They're ready to put out a fire. Let's get some flames.
Yeah. We get a video package for this bizarre match. Vampiro comes out with a gas can and a blowtorch, and he lights up like a little...
It's like a tiki torch looking thing.
Yeah, a little like small thing. That is the only way you can light somebody on fire in this match, apparently.
We had a segment during this build where the entire ring was ablaze.
No, it wasn't.
The ropes. The ropes were on fire.
No, there was a video. It was part of the video package. We didn't get that.
Oh, did that not actually happen?
No, that was just a video package, cool photo.
We've seen that shot multiple times.
Honestly,
I thought that it happened.
It wouldn't shock me if that wasn't even for this match, if they just had that footage. Because I don't think we get Vampiro doing that shot, just Sting.
We've seen that shot so many times in those video packages. I really thought that happened, and I just
no. We get a trash can in the ring.
The trash can on fire. I know that wrestling in general has the capabilities to have the turnbuckles have fire in them. Kane.
Well,
I know that happens.
Inferno matches.
Yeah,
have each side with flames.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this
we
was not
know it. There's a capability of this. Why in a human torch match where the whole thing's fire? Why would we not do this?
Because you have to have a torch.
There can also be a torch. But no, you also don't have to have a torch. The whole point is that the human is a torch.
They don't understand where
the human torch in Fantastic Four does not come around with a tiki torch a la Charlottesville, you know? They're on fire.
Sting's music hits and he's on top of the Turnertron, as I've heard it called.
The what?
Because it's technically a Titantron because it's Titan Towers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But Sting's on top of the Tron and raises the torch up there. And it's like, you want to light me on fire? You got to come up here.
So we're making the fire even more difficult to acquire.
Sting then rappels down the side.
And I'm going to scream.
As Sting is rappelling down, Vampiro is mad and yells at Mark Madden for some reason.
I mean, do you need a reason?
Once Sting gets to the ring, match starts. Vampiro hits a spin kick early, but Sting hits a power slam and a face buster. Vampiro gets his boot up on a Stinger splash and then dodges a second attempt. And Vampiro then pours gasoline on Sting, and Sting, being covered in gas, chooses to retreat towards the torch.
Sure.
And commentary's like, oh my God, it stinks. Oh, man.
It smells like gas in here. Oh, my God. I don't think that was gasoline. I think that was water.
Sting low blows Vampiro, and they brawl on the stage. Then they start climbing the truss, and Vampiro knocks Sting off while they're climbing from about 10 feet up through a crash pad.
Yeah, so he's fine.
But there's, like, no reaction for the spot. It just happens so quick. It's like, oh, and he's up. Okay.
Oh, it's fine. Yeah. It really, like, takes away some of the gravitas of that whole moment.
I think it doesn't help that you're about to go way up top. So you're literally, like, promising something else is going to happen.
True.
And then doing a lesser version.
True.
They then both climb up to the top. And if this match didn't already jump the shark, I think this is where it really does.
What, with the thunder and the lightning?
Yes.
Yeah,
so
what?
They do flickering lighting and some thunder sounds.
Okay, Rainforest Cafe, I see you.
And then they both keep disappearing from view. And I'm like, all right, what are you setting up here?
Yeah.
And it's like, eventually, we get a very, very, very wide camera shot. Wider than any of the other shots you were doing before.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
But Vampiro has the torch. And all of a sudden...
He sets someone who looks like Sting on fire.
And then that person who looks like Sting falls very professionally off of this super tall truss into a crash pad.
Yes. He jumps, we should say.
Because he does jump.
Commentary does actually point out that he jumps, like, shut the fuck up. Don't point that out.
We're supposed to believe that he fell.
But yeah, so Sting has fallen off the top of the Tron. Vampiro wins because he set him on fire, and... commentary does the a tragedy has happened voice. Scott Hudson's getting his fucking money's worth because he is pissed and like disgusted about, like, get the camera off him. Don't, like, celebrate this man. Why are we seeing replays? And it's like,
that is true. Yeah,
like, why are we seeing replays? Because he paid a lot of money for this spot.
Because this was the whole point. We knew this was going to happen. It was a human torch match. It was always sold that some person would be on fire. So the thing that they did, though, is usually in these kinds of, like, you use a stunt double or something, they'll cut away and they'll cut back to the whomever on a stretcher or whatever, and it is the original person.
Oh, yes.
They cover this person in fire extinguisher powder smoke so densely that we never see an inch of this person's skin, face, hair, anything. We don't know this. We don't know what gender, what race. We know nothing about this double.
To
we just know they're covered in.
He is literally
smoke.
Being stretchered out, and they're still spraying.
They're still spraying
his face.
Him. There is not like. There's no reason at that point.
Yeah, fire's out.
It was insane the amount of. I think they went through like multiple fire extinguishers worth of smoke on this guy. This poor man. He was like inhaling smoke. Yeah. Probably couldn't breathe.
But yeah, so Scott Hudson is distraught, Mark Madden is mesmerized, and Tony Schiavone is fucking over it.
He's like shoot pissed.
Yeah, he's like leaning back in his chair, arms folded, like,
what the fuck is my job? Why am I here? What am I doing with my life? How do I get out of this?
Well, speaking of getting out of this, Pamela Pumpkins is with Eric Bischoff, and he's
so
calling off the big surprise.
No big surprise. Everyone's done. No big surprise. What was the surprise going to be?
Right. The sale's off.
Is that who he was on the phone with? The sale was actively falling through.
Yeah.
Pamela Pumpkins, read the room.
But it's Michael Buffer time.
What? We haven't got Michael Buffer in so long.
Since April 24th. It is Kevin Nash versus Jeff Jarrett for the WWE title. Emily, what is the story going into this match?
I don't remember.
There really isn't one. Jeff Jarrett keeps losing the world title is the story.
Some guy has the title and he doesn't want to have, like,
and then Kevin Nash killed everybody in the New Blood.
Yeah. Some guy has something that Kevin Nash wants, and then Kevin Nash got it, so the guy that he took it from wants it back. That's the story.
Well, no, Kevin Nash gave it away to Ric Flair, and then he won it back, and then Kevin Nash went, oh, no, I want that.
Who cares? Who cares?
To put over how unimportant Jeff Jarrett is, Mark Madden talks over his Michael Buffer intro.
The entire time. Michael Buffer is so expensive, and you're going to talk over this man? That would be enough to fire Mark Madden if there's not already.
Michael Buffer also doesn't have accurate information because Jarrett's a 4-time champ, and he calls him a 3-time champ.
Yeah, whatever.
They can't even keep track of who the fuck.
Yeah, they don't even know who's got the title.
Ernest Miller then comes out to the ramp pre-match. He's rocking a trench coat. I kind of spotted the referee shirt under his jacket before that.
I just get very mad when the cat is just here. I just don't like seeing the cat.
Well, since this is a really big show, they have celebrity guests. The special guest bell ringer is Conan.
Wow.
Special guest timekeeper is Rey Mysterio.
What?
Special guest belt keeper is Disco Inferno.
I'm starting to see a pattern.
The special guest ring announcer is Hoovy the Juice.
Pardon?
Tony Schiavone does point out, well, Buffer already did the ring introduction, so we don't really need him.
Well, he just wanted to be included.
And there's the enforcer and referee. It's the cat.
Awesome. I'm really glad you're here to play, guys.
Jeff Jarrett has a massive elbow pad on him, and I'm like, more often than not, that's from a fucking staph infection.
Oh, really? Oh, you said that when we were watching.
Famously,
I thought you were just, like,
making it up. Big elbow pads out of nowhere are staph infection.
Interesting. I don't really understand staph infections.
Neither do I, but I know.
I know they're a big deal. I know they're bad.
The two ones I can think of are Steve Austin and John Cena. And if you ever want to not eat for a couple of days, listen to Steve Austin talk about his staph infection and him trying to drain it.
Ew.
Nash overpowers Jarrett early, but gets distracted by the heels just getting on the apron. Jarrett hits punches in the corner, but Nash comes back with knees, and they then go back to the corner. Something happens that everyone starts looking towards the ramp, but then, like, nothing happens. Like,
yeah.
Even Kevin Nash is like, what the fuck? But, like, nothing of consequence. We get a framed-up elbow, and they go to the floor. Nash gets pushed into the ring post, and Nash drops Jarrett on the announce table, and they go into the crowd. What's a countout?
Who cares?
Especially when the heel champion can retain his belt via countout.
True.
The heel champion who is in favor with the higher-ups.
Interesting. But they don't even start, they don't even count. They don't even try to count.
Yes. The one good bit of this is that Kevin Nash grabs a guy's beer, sips it, and gives it back to the guy.
Oh my god, that was wonderful.
Nash hits a padded chair shot to Jeff Jarrett. Back at ringside, Ray hits Nash in the knee with a chair. And then in the ring, Jeff Jarrett uses the chair more on the knee. Jarrett keeps working on the leg and tries for a figure four, but gets pushed off. Nash is still down, so Jarrett stays in the leg, including a single-leg Boston Crab. Nash gets the ropes to break the hold, and Jarrett tries to wake the crowd up to little success.
Yeah, you're not waking these people up. We're sleepy. We're done.
More plodding knee action, and Jeff Jarrett locks in the figure four for a fucking while. Nash almost turns Jeff Jarrett over, but can't. He eventually gets in the ropes. And despite being in the figure four for that long, he gets in the ropes, immediately is up. Doesn't sell it at all.
No. Why would he?
Once he's up, he's hit with a ring bell by Conan for only a two. Nash starts a comeback, including a side slam to Jarrett, taking out Rey Mysterio, mostly at the knee, his injured knee.
His injured knee. The very knee.
Conan, who's also injured, and a belt shot to Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, we have never actually fully clarified if Conan and Rey are cleared to be in the ring wrestling.
Ah, this isn't wrestling. This is just interfering. Disco Inferno attacks Mickey J, so Nash tries to take him out at ringside, but Hoovy hits Nash with a chair, which just, like, knocks him out. Nash kicks out of the eventual pin and then takes out all the filthy animals. Jeff Jarrett hits a stroke, but takes ages to pin Nash, so Nash kicks out. Nash stops a diving guitar shot with a chokeslam. The Cat, who's now the ref, goes to count the three, but after two, oh, he has something in his eye. So
this is where I think when Kevin Nash is down, he flips off the Cat. I think that's this is where it was. There was a point wherever when Kevin Nash was laid out in the ring and the Cat was doing something bullshitty on the side of the ring and he just like very lazily throws up the finger.
Yeah, it wouldn't be here, but I think he's pretty good worked over.
It was somewhere with the Cat being stupid.
So the Cat has no plans to count a three. So Kevin Nash jackknifes the Cat. Then he gets him out. Jackknife to Jeff Jarrett.
Him out.
Rick Steiner then attacks Charles Robinson trying to get into the ring. God.
It's chaos. It's become chaos.
I didn't even see them come out. Tank Abbott and Scott Steiner are just seen fighting on the ramp.
Yeah, why are you here? It's not your time.
The Filthy Animals actually get Nash down, finally. And then the Goldberg Monster Truck pulls into the arena.
Okay.
He's very clearly not driving.
This killed me. Because it's been looming in the background of shots for weeks now. Oh, we definitely saw that Goldberg's driving this truck. We've definitely seen him get out of the truck, right? So this truck is being driven into the arena very carefully by a man that is so obviously not Goldberg.
Additionally, logistically, remember that shot, that area we saw, like with all the cops, where Hogan came in? That is the entrance to the loading dock, which leads into that spot.
So
that is
they
the
have
only
to have
way.
Driven through.
Yes.
Did this truck just run over a bunch of cops?
Maybe.
Is there a mass murder going on outside?
Well, he called his friend Joe the cop, and he worked it out.
Joe?
Yeah, from the finger poke night. You don't remember Joe?
Oh, my God.
He got my best bit.
Ah!
Yeah, but we don't see Goldberg until he's halfway down the ramp. It's like
it's implied that he got out of the truck.
We couldn't even see him get out. I assume he did, but I think you can't look cool getting out of a monster truck like that, so let's not try. Also, his music hits somewhere around here. Goldberg gets in the ring. All the filthy animals bail. Kevin Nash and Jeff Jarrett are getting to their feet. Goldberg's in the corner ready to spear, and Nash just keeps pointing at Jeff Jarrett weirdly.
Like, spear him. Do it.
Yeah, because... why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But Goldberg smiles at Kevin Nash and hits the spear on Kevin Nash.
Swerve.
Yep. It's the mother of all swerves. Goldberg is now a heel. Jeff Jarrett pins Kevin Nash. Eric Bischoff and Russo come out to the ring as we get Goldberg sucks chance, which might have been piped in. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because this kind of came out of nowhere. We've never heard of Goldberg.
Because even like Tony Schiavone's like, do you hear what they're chanting?
Yeah. We've never gotten a Goldberg sucks chant before.
Goldberg hugs Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo. We get some trash being thrown in the ring. Mark Madden is flip-flopping between being like, he knew what the surprise was the whole time. And then he's like, oh, but was this the surprise?
We'll never know.
Yeah. It was. That's the big...
But it got called off.
He's swerving Kevin Nash,
isn't
he?
Oh my God, it's all a big old swerve. Everything's swerving. Somebody call the police because we got some drunk drivers the way they're swerving.
But, yeah, let's make the one saving grace of the show a heel, you fucking idiots. Oh, you never saw it coming, bro.
Now all we have is Booker T to hang our hat on.
Pretty much.
We love him.
Honestly, yeah, with a couple people leaving in the upcoming weeks, it's going to be...
He's our hero. He's
interesting.
Our only hope.
Yeah, thoughts on this actual match and then thoughts on the heel turn?
It was dumb. Like, the match itself was fine.
Kevin Nash's style
was
not meant to go 17 minutes.
No. And, like, it was fine. There was nothing special about it. And then it devolved into chaos. And then there was the truck. And the truck was amazing. But then it just all got fucked. I don't know. This was not something that I felt the need to watch.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of talked a bit over the past weeks about, ooh, got to make Kevin Nash look strong. It's still going. Like, holy shit.
Why do we need to keep making him look strong? He's strong. We know this. It is known.
And then, yeah, thoughts on turning Goldberg heel right after he comes back.
Not a thing surprises me anymore. This doesn't even make me angry. I'm just waiting for this all to be done.
You know what this feels like? This feels like when they did the, like during the invasion, when they did the old Stone Cold, where it's like, oh, the guy you really like is back and he's back to being the way you like him. And then like a week later, it's like, no, he's a heel.
Yeah, fuck you.
And yeah, this leaves a really sour taste at the end of a bad show.
After a bad long build. Why would you keep watching?
Yeah.
Honestly, like sincerely, why would you keep watching? What is there coming up on Monday night that you need to tune in for?
And I actually peeked into the Raw on Monday. It's mm-hmm. like the Raw is a big heels get their comeuppance show. So it's like, oh, it's a nice feel good show for WWF.
Wow. So yeah, why would you watch Nitro?
Yeah.
Go watch the bad guys get stomped to shit on Raw. Don't keep watching them win over here.
Yeah, they do Shane and Vince against the Dudley Boys in a tables match.
Oh man, that sounds great.
I don't know what we're looking forward to on Nitro, but I don't have the highest of hopes.
No.
But, Emily, that is the last pay-per-view we have before Bash at the Beach 2000.
Finally!
We're finally going to get there.
Finally!
October 18th, the episode will be
out. Son of a bitch!
But we have some episodes before then. But even before that, we have to go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP.
Oh my God.
I can see us matching on all three. We'll see.
Oh, I don't know, because I've struggled with all three of these. I don't have an MVP right now.
Okay.
Well, so why don't you start then? What's your best bit?
Best bit, I think, is Flair.
Okay, agreed.
Yeah, I think that is the best bit. I considered giving another match my best bit, but I realized what I actually wanted to do was give Booker my MVP.
Okay, yeah.
Getting a good Sean Stasiak match, that it takes talent.
And just Booker T is just, he's good.
He made the entrance work and he pulled it off where it actually looked cool at the end.
Yes, that is true. And he still looked big and strong.
So are you going Booker as well?
I think I'll do it. Yeah, I agree.
And then Emily, what is your worst bit?
So I'm struggling with it. I don't forever though think that this is a whole show is the worst bit.
No, to me, the worst match is the Human Torch match. And
yeah.
The Goldberg heel turn has to be in the conversation because of what it means for the company.
I get, okay, when you put it like that, sure. If the Goldberg turn didn't, like, surprise me, so it didn't elicit enough of a reaction for me to even think of it as a worst bit, I will take the Human Torch, though.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with the Goldberg heel turn, because I think, come Monday, the Human Torch match, you can just forget about. The Goldberg heel turn is an active stab wound.
Fair. However, the way they booked the Human Torch match, the whole lead-up, you shouldn't be able to forget about it on Monday.
Yeah.
That should have been massive.
Admittedly, we should say, props to the stunt guy doing that safely and, you know, and I didn't hear that didn't go terribly, so.
True.
But that's going to do it for the Great American Bash.
Thank God. It has been a long time coming.
Emily, from here to Bash the Beach, it's 4 Nitros and that's it.
Wow.
And I'll give you a little treat. Vince Russo does not write 3 of the episodes.
Wow. Who does?
I think it's some guy? Just a committee.
Whoa. Okay.
Because Russo kind of like soft quits for a little bit.
Good. Fuck him. Okay. That's exciting. That's something.
I know the Young Dragons and 3 Count will wrestle.
3 Count?
Probably not next week because next week is the one he does write.
I haven't seen 3 Count in so long.
So Emily, we have to slog through one more in Russo Nitro and then we get some fun ones and then we're back to Russo.
All right, so there is a reprieve there. I'll take it.
But until we get on the road to Bash the Beach, you can listen to all of our back catalog, including the road to the last Bash the Beach last year.
Woo! Was that the one they wrestled in the water?
No, that was in March, babe.
Really? Wow.
That's the Wall, brother.
That's the Wall was where they wrestled
into the
beach with the 7-layer taco dip?
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
Yeah, that's Spring Breakout.
Oh, Spring Breakout. I knew it was something around water.
Yeah, Bash the Beach last year was not important. It is one of our most popular episodes, though, so.
Okay. Hey, I love me some taco dip, brother.
No, I'm Bash the Beach, not. Jesus Christ. All right, well, you can listen to all of that everywhere podcasts are found, except for SoundCloud. If you run into issues anywhere, let me know. I tried hosting us through Spotify and kind of decided against it, yeah. So we're back on the same spot where we just kind of reverted. So it should be fine, but let me know if you run into anywhere.
Yeah, even 112 episodes in, we're still hitting some technical bumps. And you know, that's just who we are.
And we finally got an actual copyright strike on YouTube.
So. We're real creators.
But you can also follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod, except for Facebook, where it's the Butts in the Seats podcast. And over on our Patreon, we have 18 bonus episodes over there, including Bash the Beach 94,
yeah,
and our continuation of TNA's move to Monday nights.
That has been really fun to watch.
Not the new Monday Night Wars, their move to Monday nights.
But watching TNA over there has been a lot of fun. So if you want to pop in and see what we're doing over there, there's a lot of TNA coming up, and we might have something different coming up soon, too.
But I think let's wrap this up. Emily, any final thoughts before we head on out of here?
I'm so excited to actually be able to watch all the stuff around Bash at the Beach. You can't even understand.
You're so going to be let down.
I don't care. I just need to know. It's I need to be segment. Done. I don't care. I must know.
But until we get to Bash at the Beach and Bitsies 2, the episode after.
Bitsies 2. We haven't even talked about Bitsies 2, have we?
But until then, I'm Nick.
I am Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Bye.